Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Viraham ka paramasya yogamaya.
Viraham ka paramasya yogamaya.
Yuyam bhavascha bhagavanatha daitya varya. Prachina Piyaku Anga Uta Vascha
Prachina Pari Anga
Uta Vascha. The translation. O Narada, although the potencies of the Lord are unknowable and immeasurable, still, because we are all surrendered souls, we know how He acts through Yogamaya potencies. And similarly, the potencies of the Lord are also known to the all-powerful Shiva, the great king of the atheist family. Namely, Prahlad Maharaj, Swayambhuvamana, his wife Shatarupa, his sons and daughters like Priyavraja, Uttanapada, Akuti, Devahuti, and Prasuti, Prachinabhari, Vibhu, Anga, the father of Vena, Maharaj Dhruva, Ikshvaku, Aila, Mujukunda, Maharaj Janaka, Ghari, Raghu, Ambarish, Sagara, Gayan, Nahusha, Vanyanata, Alaka, Shatatanbe, Anu, Rantidev, Bhishma, Bali, Amutaraya, Dilipa, Sovari, Uttamaka, Shivi, Devala, Pipalada, Sarasvata, Uddhava, Parashara, Purisena, Vibhishan, Hanuman, Shikarav Goswami, Arjuna, Aristasena, Vidura, Shrutadev, etc. Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. All the great devotees of the Lord, as mentioned above, who flourished in the past or present, and all the devotees of the Lord who will come in the future, are aware of the different potencies of the Lord, along with the potency of His name, quality, pastimes, entourage, personality, etc. And how do they know? Certainly it is not by mental speculation, nor by any attempt by dint of limited instruments of knowledge. By the limited instruments of knowledge, either the senses or the material instruments like microscopes and telescopes, one cannot even fully know the Lord's material potencies which are manifested before our eyes. For example, there are many millions and billions of planets far, far beyond the scientist's calculation, but these are only the manifestation of the Lord's material energy. What can the scientists hope to know of the spiritual potency of the Lord by such material efforts? Mental speculations by adding some dozens of ifs and maybes cannot aid the advancement of knowledge. On the contrary, such mental speculations will only end in despair by dismissing the case abruptly and declaring the non-existence of God. The same person therefore ceases to speculate on subjects beyond the jurisdiction of his tiny brain, and as a matter of course, he tries to learn to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, who alone can lead one to the platform of real knowledge. In the Upanishads, it is clearly said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be known simply by working very hard and taxing the good brain, nor can He be known simply by mental speculation and jugglery of words. The Lord is knowable only by one who is a surrendered soul. Here in Brahmaji, the greatest of all material living beings acknowledges this truth. Therefore, the fruitless spoiling of energy by pursuing the path of experimenting unto the Lord. Must be given up. One should gain knowledge by surrendering unto the Lord and by acknowledging the authority of the persons mentioned herein. The Lord is unlimited, and by the grace of the Yogamaya helps the surrendered soul to know Him proportionately with the advance of one's surrender. Om Ajnana Timiranyasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Nirutam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavisam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Sri Rupa Kadamyam Dadati Swaparantukam. Panchakalpatrivischa, Kripasanyubya Evacha, Patitanam Pavanibhu Vaishnavibhu Namo Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha, Sivasari Guru Bhakti. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Okay, so the title of the chapter is Scheduled Incarnations, and here Lord Brahma is actually speaking, explaining everything from how the unalloyed devotees of the Lord get to know or understand the unlimited personality, and also how the atheists or the atheists or the demons find it very difficult to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first point that is mentioned here, of course there's a whole listing of the different living entities. Prahlad, Sukadeva Goswami, Arjuna, etc. Explaining how, because of their devotion, they're actually able to understand the potencies of the Lord. In an ordinary situation, of course, the Lord is beyond any material speculation. He's beyond any material means to try to be understood. So, Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the past, pure devotees have known the Lord through the process of pure bhakti, and in the future, the same shall be, that the devotees will know the potencies of the Lord only by the process of devotional service. And of course, that includes by surrendering oneself unto the authority, also the authority of the persons who have performed devotional service in that manner. So the pure devotees who are coming in the line, in disciplic succession, have that wonderful potency and the blessings they leave behind, so that all the living entities who gradually take up the path of bhakti may also come to know the unlimited Lord. So it is only through the yogamaya potency, the spiritual energy, the direct spiritual energy of Krishna, that we can actually be able to understand and know Krishna. We cannot know Krishna through the external energy or by serving the modes of material nature, etc. We have to be situated in a superior mode of operation, and that transcendental or that superior mode, of course, it is the Lord's own internal potency, His yogamaya potency. By being situated in this potency, one has the favor of being able to understand not only the spiritual potencies, but also all the other potencies of Krishna, the material energy, how it works, how it affects different types of living entities altogether. So all these personalities that I mentioned, from Lord Shiva down to Arjuna, they have also understood the Lord's potencies by their constant efforts in devotional service. And as Prabhupada makes a point at the end of the purport, he says, by the grace of the Yoga Maya, helps the surrendered souls to know Him proportionately with the advance of one's surrender. So accordingly, or proportionately, as we surrender to Krishna, He reveals Himself to a certain degree. So the actions, of course, of all these different personalities, Bali Maharaj, King Vaina, Maharaj Janak, all their surrendering process, if we look very deeply, we'll find that it was to varying degrees. Their surrender was, it wasn't the same. For example, if you take the example of Prahlad Maharaj, or the example of King Rantidev or Bhishma, we see that their mode of, or their, the depth of their surrender in comparison to each other is very, very different. They're all different levels of devotees, nonetheless, all different levels of pure devotees. Nonetheless, the surrender that they show to Krishna varies in terms of depth and consistency. So for us as well, we might hear of the six items of surrender have been wonderfully explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And this has also been explained in the Harinanda Chintamani. Jiva Goswami also explains these items of surrender in his Bhakti Sandhana. So these are also quoted by Lord Chaitanya in the middle section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in the Majjhima, there's a verse that reads, Anupulasya Sattva Patipula Vibhajanam Rakshasya Sati Vishvasa Gopirj Vilayana Vyanam Tata Almanik Shepa Prabhanya Sadhyashanam Gati. So the translation reads, the six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give all protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full surrender and humility. So these are all the different divisions of surrender. And as we perform or as we practice devotional service, we'll take these divisions to different depths, we'll take them to different levels of understanding. So these different six divisions of surrender are very necessary for one to show the Supreme Lord that they are actually under His shelter or under His umbrella. And when we show Krishna by dint of practical execution of the bhakti process, it is Krishna Himself who actually restores all these qualities of surrender in a living entity. Not only are we dependent on Krishna for our sustenance or for our growth in devotional service, but to also reveal and instill within us these qualities or these divisions of surrender, it is up to the Lord's mercy to actually award us these qualities. So we make the endeavor and we show Krishna that we are willing to surrender, and by His grace, as He is situated in the heart as the Paramatma, He enthuses us and He allows us to have that enthusiasm and that confidence to continue on the surrender process. So all of us, of course, are trying to practice surrender, but it is never a thing that one can actually say, I've perfected the art of surrender. It is a continual process of trying to become humble, a continual process of showing Krishna that you are my only shelter, a continual process of complying with Krishna as one's Supreme Lord and Master. So it just doesn't end with one activity. It is always continuing, even up to the stage of perfection. We can always continue to show how much we're surrendered to Krishna. So there's all these different levels, and hence we have
different personalities who have been given as examples of those who followed these six divisions of surrender in their day-to-day lives. And by doing thus, the Lord gradually, proportionate to the advancement of their surrender, the Lord gradually reveals to them or the Lord gradually gives them the understanding of His potencies and how they can understand His potencies. So it's not just only, bhakti is not so much only on our strength, our own intelligence, our own renunciation, or our own knowledge. So much of it is actually dependent on the predecessors. So Prabhupada makes a strong point that we not only try to understand the Supreme Lord by mental speculation, or we try to understand the Absolute Truth by our limited senses and the instruments that we may create. Prabhupada gives the examples of telescopes and microscopes, etc. So all of this, of course, are created by living entities that are conditioned in the modes of material nature. So it's very difficult to actually put faith in such apparatus or in such objects that have been created, because they are very limited in their scope. It is very difficult for something that is limited to understand something that which is unlimited. Whereas the mysticism of Krishna consciousness or pure devotional service is that the limited living entity, the minute living entity, is able to understand or even just grasp a tiny fraction of understanding of the Supreme Lord by the Lord's mercy, that the unlimited may give potency to the very limited living entity to try to understand his name, his form, his pastime, his activities. But from a material point of view, these things are not possible. The Upanishads, as Prabhupada stated, the Upanishads explain how it is impossible with blunt material senses to actually try to approach Krishna. There's that verse, Atashi Krishna na badi na bhave kriyam indriya sevamukhe hi jivado swayame vasparatyada. With the blunt material senses, it is actually not possible to understand the Supreme Pure Person, that our senses have to be purified by the process of Krishna consciousness, by devotional service. All the different senses that we're using in the material world, they can be purified by being put into the fire of devotional service. And in that way, that is how we can actually grasp a tiny or a fraction of the understanding of the Absolute Truth. In the next purport, there's a wonderful point that I briefly saw where Prabhupada is explaining how the surrender process is in one's own hand. That it is, Prabhupada mentioned that it is up to the individual, that the individual can surrender immediately, or they can wait a very, very long time, but it is up to the individual to actually take up all these six divisions. It is up to the individual to accept things that are only favorable for bhakti. It is up to the individual to accept, to reject things that are not favorable to Krishna consciousness. It is up to the individual to have that strong conviction that Krishna will give all protection, not the individual's mind, not the individual's intelligence, or not the individual's, you know, wealth or beauty or external body. It is up to each individual to accept that the Lord is one supreme guardian and master. It is up to the individual to try to practice humility. And as humility is explained by Srila Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita, not having the anxiety to be praised by others. That's how Srila Prabhupada explained humility, that we're not putting ourselves in an anxiety to be recognized, to be known, to be respected by those that are around us. When we just see ourselves as servants of Krishna without any other connotation. And of course, to fully surrender, to give up everything, even one's own body, one's mind, one's words are to be used for the pleasure of Krishna. This is all the package of surrender. So in that mood, Srila Prabhupada explains how it is up to the devotee, it is in the devotee's hand to actually accept the process of surrender. And gradually when Krishna sees that this desire is there to want to encompass all these six divisions in one's heart, in one's life, then Krishna gives the spiritual strength, Krishna gives the intelligence as to how one can practice Krishna consciousness, how one can fully surrender, and after that surrendering process, how one can follow in the footsteps of those who have surrendered in the past. Because it states here that there have been those who have surrendered in the past and practiced devotional service and achieved the perfection of understanding the qualities and the potencies of Krishna. So by this combination of surrender and this combination of being dependent on the previous acharyas and their teachings and following in their footsteps, then it becomes possible to know Krishna. It becomes possible to actually understand the personality Krishna. Otherwise, the only thing that we'll end up doing is speculate about Krishna, about his potencies, his name, etc. We will put faith in our material activities, we'll put faith in our material instruments and see them as the guiding forces in trying to understand the absolute truth. But that is not the formula for one who wants to make advancement. The formula, as explained by Srila Prabhupada, is to reject this mental speculation, is to reject the faith that is put into material instruments, and to embrace what has been given by the acharyas and follow in their footsteps as to how they have also attained perfection. So sometimes by hearing examples and by reading the examples of devotees who have followed in these footsteps, we get the inspiration and the understanding that yes, it is possible. But sometimes we may be a bit frightened that these are all very advanced souls, they're very pure devotees. We're not, we're a neophyte, so we're on a very low level. Nonetheless, the part of perfection means we understand the sambandha, we understand what the abhidhaya is, and we understand what the prayojan is. So when we have those three, we understand what our goal is, we act accordingly, and we use the right processes. We set some goals as to how we're going to attain that prayojan. So even on a very, very low level or beginning phase of bhakti, we have standards that we've set for ourselves, we have goals that have been set so that we know that we are gradually going somewhere. It is not just a very dry and painful road to perfection, but along the way we are always tasting Krishna in all different in different degrees. So it doesn't mean that because we haven't attained or we haven't tangibly attained that perfection of Krishna Prem, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're not on the way there. Part of attaining that perfection is staying on the road and practicing the processes of bhakti, the nine processes of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam. Staying in the association of devotees, chanting Hare Krishna. All these different processes are there to aid us to get to our goal, to our prayojan. So all these things are important. It was interesting that Srila Prabhupada here speaks a lot about surrender. He could have put more focus on anything like following the disciplic succession, etc., etc. But he puts a lot of focus on surrender because it takes, in order for us to actually completely, wholeheartedly embrace that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Krishna, takes a lot of faith and a lot of surrendering on our part to leave everything aside and just place ourselves at Krishna's lotus feet. And in the pastimes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see how Lord Chaitanya constantly urges the devotees to give their heart to Krishna, not only their body, not only doing things mechanically, but actually putting the heart into the process of hearing and chanting and associating with devotees. So this process of giving the heart is something that is very necessary in Krishna's service. Otherwise things may become very dry and mechanical. And these are not, you know, being a hardcore renunciate or being very austere. They are not authorized angas of bhakti. They are not necessary for pure devotional service. There's no shastric pramana that says one has to be renounced, one has to be austere, etc. We're in Kali Yuga, our austerity itself is just rising early in the morning, chanting Hare Krishna, keeping ourselves clean and controlling the tongue. That is our austerity in bhakti. And as we practice Krishna consciousness, all these things are naturally included. Renouncing the object of the senses, simplicity, all these things naturally follow as we progress in Krishna consciousness. So it's not necessary to single-handedly try to cultivate them. They will come naturally as we apply the process properly. But if we're not applying it properly, we can have a bit of confusion. The process has to be applied properly, then the desired goal, the desired result will be ours. So, by the Lord's grace, by the Lord's potencies, we are able to understand Him, although He is the unlimited person. And depending on our level of surrender, the Lord reveals Himself to a vast degree or to a lesser degree. It is a relationship. So this should be the open secret. That the more we give ourselves in bhakti, the more we give our heart to Krishna and not keep it away. Because sometimes we give everything else, but we keep the heart, which is where bhakti is lying dormant. We keep it aside in fear of giving it to Krishna. But that is what Krishna is after. For example, in the pastime of Raghunath Das Goswami Lord Chaitanya, when Raghunath was eating the rice that he would collect after it had been rotten, thrown out in Jagannath Puri, then given to the cows, then the cows would even reject that rice, then Raghunath would go and wash it and eat it. Then the Lord had heard about how much devotion, how much bhakti Raghunath had. The Lord Himself personally went there and went to taste that rice. And He explained to Raghunath that He has never tasted so much bhakti. Although Raghunath was very, very austere and very, very renounced, Lord Chaitanya said He was just after His bhakti. He wasn't after His renunciation. He wasn't after His austerity. He was tasting the devotion in Raghunath Das's association. So this bhakti, this love, this is what Lord Chaitanya is looking for. And part of that surrender is that we also give. Not only do we reject things that are not favorable, we perform things that are favorable, we practice humility. Not only do we do these things that might seem external, but also internally, we're cultivating that knowledge about how to give our heart in Krishna's service. And in that way, we make sure that our service is not mechanical. We can make advancement, which is very slow, mechanically, but if we put our heart in, if we put our emotions in bhakti, our heartfelt emotions in bhakti, Which doesn't mean we're being sentimental when I say emotions. I mean we put our heart in with knowledge about how to put our heart into our service. So emotions have to be equipped with knowledge from Shastra. An example we could use is that we are taught, Nectar of Devotion teaches us that we offer heartfelt prayers to the deity. Right, not that we just whimsically just look at the deities without any thought, that we put our heart in, but we use the prayers of the previous acharyas to glorify the deity. And then, if need be, if we want to say it's our special prayer, then we do that as well. But it is a sign of great humility when we take on our head a prayer that's been recited by one of our previous predecessors, and then we offer it to Krishna. That is more touching, and that is more heartfelt. That is more a sign of humility, because we understand that I myself, a tiny living entity, I cannot compose beautiful prayers and poems, but I can take from our previous acharyas and offer them to Krishna. So we take their knowledge, we take the essence of their offering, whatever it may be, whether it's pertaining to our anarthas, how to help, whether it's pertaining to how to grow in bhakti, how to surrender more, and we offer it with our heartfelt emotions to Krishna. And in that way, we're learning how to properly follow the guidelines of how to approach the Lord in His deity form. So this combination of surrender and the combination of knowing the unlimited Lord by approaching the previous acharyas and teachers, it is a sure way of success in trying to know Krishna. So a wonderful example of such a personality, of course, who not only reveals something special for the devotees in this line following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, is Madhavendra Puri, and today is his disappearance day of Sri Madhavendra Puri. We of course know that Madhavendra Puri had many pastimes with the Gopal deity, with the Kshirachara Gopinath deity, so many pastimes the Lord performed, reciprocating with the devotional service of Madhavendra Puri. And this reciprocation is there, obviously, because Madhavendra Puri's life was 100% dedicated to the pleasure of the Lord. Nothing was kept aside. He gave everything to the Lord. So it is said by Vrindavan Das Thakur that Madhavendra Puri's body was completely full of divine love. Right, this comes, of course, he's a very, very intimate associate of the Lord. In the spiritual world, it explains how Madhavendra Puri is a kalpa vriksha. So he is, when the Lord is being worshipped, not in terms of worship with arti, etc., when the pastimes are going on in the groves of Vrindavan, they go within the different forests and the different kuns with different colors of each gopi. The lords are dressed in different cloth depending on where they're at. And within each grove there's a temple, and with a temple made of jewels, made of flowers, and within that temple there's the seat of the divine couple, and there's always divine creepers that are growing around that make wonderful canopies that decorate where the divine couple are. So Madhavendra Puri is one of these kalpa vriksha is a tree, one of these transcendental trees that is always witnessing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. That is why he's seen as a very, very intimate associate of the Lord, because he has heard and seen all the different intimate discussions that have gone on between the Srimati Radharani and Krishna. So there's a wonderful pastime that we can see. There's so much that has been written by Madhavendra Puri. We can read online. But of course, the famous pastime where the Gopal deity ordered in Ramuna, ordered Madhavendra Puri to restore him, digging him out of the earth and placing him on the top of the hill where they would hold an anakut ceremony, where they would bathe him with milk and yogurt and offer him sweet stuff. And this anakut ceremony, of course, we honor by performing the Govardhan Puja, where we put Giriraj on the hill and we also bathe him and offer him sweets, etc. So, Madhavendra Puri, of course, is very much linked to Lord Chaitanya. There's a very wonderful verse that has been only spoken by two personalities, Srimati Radharani and Lord Chaitanya and Madhavendra Puri himself. And in this intense mood called Viraha Bhav, Srila Madhavendra Puri, toward the end of his life, recited this verse, which is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 4, text 197. Ayedina dayadra nata he maturanata kada balokshaye hirayam tva loka khataram daita brahmyati kim karoti aham. O compassionate Lord of the poor and humble, O Lord of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Without seeing you, my heart has become very much afflicted. O my beloved, I am overwhelmed. What shall I do now? So this verse is explained by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami as the Kastuva jewel of all valuable jewels. So it is one of the most valuable verses spoken by Srimati Radharani herself. And this was Srimati Radharani's cry, of course, to attain the association of Shyamasundar. And Srimati Radharani's mercy, of course, came through the same verse through the mouth of Srila Madhavendra Puri. So in this way, Srila Madhavendra Puri was always in this mood, a very, very high state of love of God. And in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, of course, this teaching that he himself brought into the worship of Radha and Krishna in separation, this Vipralamba Bhav, in which Lord Chaitanya himself was showing, as we know that the Ishtadev of Lord Chaitanya is Lord Jagannath, and Lord Jagannath, that is a pastime about Lord Krishna and his devotees, his topmost devotees, in separation, how they could not see Krishna because he was no longer in Vrindavan, but living as a king, as a prince. So Madhavendra Puri instilled this mood into the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And before him, this mood, this certain ecstasy wasn't so much explained in detail. So this has been the great benediction given upon the descendants of Lord Chaitanya, that we have been given this understanding of intense service through separation. And by associating with the associates of Lord Asura of Madhavendra Puri, of course, and Lord Chaitanya, we're able to understand these very sweet subject matters that have been introduced by our previous acharyas, by our previous teachers. So of course, those of you who've been to Puri maybe have been to his samadhi. The samadhi of Madhavendra Puri is in Ramuna, near the temple of the Gopinath, Shilachura Gopinath deity temple. So that is where he lays to rest. So we can read about his life sketch. There's wonderful books written about Madhavendra Puri and so many classes explaining about the devotional service of Madhavendra Puri and how that devotional service attracted Krishna so much so that Krishna himself would steal milk, will steal sweet rice that was offered to himself, hide it behind his deity form, and then order his pujari to call out in the market for Madhavendra Puri to come and taste the sweet rice that the Lord himself had put aside for him. And of course, these pastimes revealing the point that's being made in this purport, that to understand these leelas, these forms of Krishna in his deity form, the leelas he has with his devotees, his paraphernalia, to understand these pastimes actually requires bhakti. In the material world, being a thief and singing about how much you're a thief does not attract anyone. But Krishna, who's known as the butter thief, Krishna who stole sweet rice for his devotee, made it very public that, yes, I have stolen a pot of sweet rice for Madhavendra Puri. And this, however, would give pleasure to those who didn't have an envious heart. This gave pleasure to the devotees. So on the absolute platform, of course, Krishna is always pleasing to everyone. Whereas the activities of the mudhas, or the fools and rascals, as Srila Prabhupada would say, they cannot appreciate these pastimes or activities of the deity form of Krishna or of the yogamaya potency of Krishna that can make him forget sometimes. They cannot appreciate these facts. Only one who has a heart infused with bhakti can actually accept and relish these pastimes of Krishna even as a thief. So it is beyond material sense perception. To be able to relish these pastimes and activities of Krishna requires bhakti. And it is through that bhakti that we're able to accept and understand Krishna in full, not in parts here, there. We bite here, we bite there, but we don't like this part. But we understand Krishna's potencies in full as being absolute. And that is only possible, as Prabhupada states, as we surrender accordingly and gradually, and as we take up the process of bhakti, following the footsteps of those who have attained perfection by following the same process, can we come to understand the unlimited person. So I'll stop there, and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions or corrections. We have a headache, or what is the root cause of our suffering? Ignorance. So that ignorance of thinking, I'm the body, I'm matter. Philosophically, we understand it, but of course, we also have to realize it. And this is something that will, as we practice bhakti, it becomes firm in our consciousness, and our consciousness gets purified. And by practicing Krishna consciousness, practically speaking, we get that realization. Not only do we have the understanding, but we also realize it and we act on that platform. So the root cause, that avidya, is gradually removed. But because we're in the material world, we are subjected to certain things. Adhyatmika, adibhautika, adidevika. We will still be afflicted by these things, but we're not engrossed in them. We know the temporariness of being in a world of duality, and we know what our goal is. So although we're situated here in the material world, we've taken up the process of bhakti, that the roots that bind us to this world have been cut, or the roots are still being cut, and we just have to keep cutting and keep cutting with knowledge and service and association. The roots become destroyed, and we're freed, we're liberated from this world. So Prabhupada is right. By taking up this process, the root cause is removed. What we go through in terms of suffering, we really don't suffer that much in comparison to lots of people out there who are suffering mentally and otherwise. So for us, it's just little reactions that Krishna uses to purify us, to remind us that this world is not a comfortable situation. Because sometimes, having higher knowledge, we might fall into the trap of being comfortable. That's the trap of the mode of goodness. You become happy and you have knowledge. But that's still within the modes of material nature, so we can't really be happy. So we have to go above that and understand how to really break our ties to this world. And that means to cut off that ignorance completely. Yes, brother? Six items of surrender. It is accepting things that are favorable for bhakti and rejecting things that are not favorable. That is true. Having the conviction that Krishna will give all protection, accepting the Lord as one's guardian and master, that's four. Five is humility, and six is to fully surrender. So these are, you can read, it's in the Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse 100. If you also have Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's there, 11.417. Did you get all of them? How to overcome? How to overcome worldly conception of life? Wow. Okay. How to overcome bodily conception of life? Something that you talk about for like a month or two. Well, how to overcome bodily conception of life? Well, we need to understand first what the body is, what it means to have a material body, and how separate we are from the body. And then we engage that same body in Krishna's service. And hopefully when our consciousness gets elevated, we get the realization that we're actually not the body. We understand that we're not the body. You know, we're sleeping, our mind goes places, or we suffer temporarily, we feel the pain goes. We see ourselves growing, our bodies are changing all the time. We just have to think very, very deeply and study and analyze our entire life to see how our body is changing. And then of course in the end, when the body dies, we're shown that we're actually not the body, because the soul is pulled out of the body. But while we're here, it's very difficult because, you know, sometimes you have a beautiful body, it's young, there's no disease, you're experiencing all these different sensations, etc. So it is very good to... This process, the sadhana process that Srila Prabhupada gave us is a very good... If we follow it properly and sincerely, we really get that realization. And it doesn't have to come after 20 or 40 years. We can understand that the bodily concept of life pertains only to bodily sensations, emotions, and some hormones. That's the bodily concept of life. our hormones, our emotions, and our sense perceptions, which are always changing all the time, and which don't necessarily give us pleasure all the time. We're separate from these things. So by controlling our mind and senses, as Prabhupada is teaching us by chanting and follow the routine morning program, in no time we can actually get the realization that, you know, we're not the body, so we can get rid of the body concept. When we properly control the mind, specifically the mind, and then naturally all our senses will be controlled, then this body conception won't bother us so much. We won't be so obsessed with what we look like. We won't be so obsessed with the color of our hair, our eyes, the lines on our face. We won't be so obsessed with it. Because with the controlled mind and the senses, we're able to study properly, we're able to chant, we're able to get the realization that we're not the body. So how to overcome the bodily conception of life? Live a life of control, of sense control. Practice devotional service sincerely, under guidance. And when we do that, very slowly, the realization comes over time. But it's not something that you wake up the next day and I have no bodily conception. Nothing at all. We have to work on it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 3 and 4, right? So I'll just... accepting the Lord as one's guardian or master and having strong conviction. So that's... It sounds similar, but it's very different. So having a strong conviction that Krishna will give one protection and accepting the Lord as one's guardian or master. They're similar, but they're very different. So when you have strong conviction, we have to separate. If we just take conviction means you're convinced that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the goal of my life. This is my Ishtadev. This is the direction I'm heading towards. So this is my complete shelter. You have this strong conviction, which means you are, without a doubt, you are firmly, you have a strong foundation. Which is very different to accepting ones as a guardian and master. So they follow each other, let me say. In order for you to accept someone as a friend, a husband or wife, you have to have strong conviction that what they say they do, they will actually do for you in that relationship. So because out of Shraddha and from our Sadhu Sangha association, we get to know about Krishna. We become convinced about the process of bhakti. And then after that, we start accepting everything else about bhakti. We start accepting deity worship. We start accepting a spiritual master. We start accepting the shastra. But that all comes from having a strong conviction about who the personality is. Without conviction, we can't accept anyone as anything. Without knowing that this is the temple president, these are his duties, if we're not convinced that this is the person, we won't accept him as our guardian or someone who is going to become our master. Just as when you see with dogs, a dog knows who is its master and who's not. It's not something that it just figures out, but it comes because of association and because of knowing some kind of conviction. However dogs get their conviction, the master is nice to them, it feeds them, it takes them for a walk, etc. The dog will accept based on the action that have already been taken place. And from that conviction, one accepts wholeheartedly the umbrella of the lotus feet. That conviction comes from knowing the tattva and the rasa of the object of affection. If we don't know the tattva, the supremacy of Krishna, and the rasa of how he deals with the living entities, we won't accept him as master. We won't accept him as our guardian. There's nothing that has convinced us. But hearing about him, hearing how he deals with devotees, hearing about his potencies, understanding that yes, he is Purushottama, he is the Supreme Person, our conviction goes high. That's why Prabhupada said we have to study Shastra and understand who Krishna is and how he deals with his devotees. In that way, our Shraddha and our conviction about Krishna being the Supreme, not Lord Brahma, not Lord Shiva, our conviction about him increases, and then, and only then, do we accept him as the master and as our guardian. So they're very, very similar, but they're also very different. It's a subtle difference. Oh, last question, and then, yeah. Well, as you grow in bhakti, I mean, you know, there's different levels of realizing the absolute truth. So as you mentioned, Paramatma is here, Brahman is out there, the all-pervasive energy of the Lord. The form of the deity is there because some of us, let me say, are very impersonal. We had no concept of God having a form. So he manifests himself kindly so that we can perform some service and get purification. But it is difficult for us to reciprocate directly with the deity because, at least for me, Krishna, Vallabha doesn't speak to me directly. It's very, very difficult. But as you grow in Krishna consciousness, as your bhakti thickens, because it's all different stages from Shraddha to Prem, where you develop, you know, Anishta, Ashakti, Ruchi. There's so many different stages, and with those different stages, you start to know Krishna more personally. So once your bhakti has evolved to a certain level, you want to interact with Krishna in one of the primary rasas. That is why the rasa that Madhavendra Puri was emphasizing, or that he re-sparked, was Madhurya rasa, which is very much afflicted by service and separation, in which one is not engrossed in seeing the Supreme Lord all the time, but the entire body is always thinking or feeling him or being reminded of him. So for a devotee, yes, we see Krishna everywhere in nature. We understand Krishna is in every atom, he's in every heart. But at the same time, we strive for having a personal relationship with Krishna. And in Nectar of Devotion, it is wonderfully explained the qualities of Krishna. It is wonderfully explained how there's different rasas, there's primary rasas, there's secondary rasas. Secondarily, of course, there's all these different ways of seeing the Lord. But the primary rasas, that's what we're more interested in because they're extremely personal. So the devotee, as they grow, they want to start having that personal relationship with Krishna. That is the highest form of realization, the personal aspect, as compared to not impersonal aspect, but a less active platform. So gradually, as we perform devotional service, it will naturally come. From sadhana bhakti, naturally comes raganuga sadhana, where the spontaneous sentiments start coming out. If you read Nectar of Devotion, gradually towards the end, when they start explaining the different qualities and the different rasas, this is also explained, that gradually a devotee will follow in the footsteps of a particular devotee who has a certain relationship with Krishna, and in that way, the anticipation, or what is called lalasamayi, or the longing for having a relationship or a certain type of relationship starts getting aroused. I think it's Lochan Das Thakur, someone, Vrindavan, who wrote the book Prarthana? Natam Das Thakur. He has all these different songs explaining how one starts developing these finer sentiments to have a personal relationship with Krishna. So like that, gradually it happens. Okay, I've gone over time. Thank you very much. Grantarachima Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki. Do from ending.